Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben and Mace here with you on a Friday before we head out to Cleveland. Going to be a dip in temperature for us as we head east.
Yep, 47, 48 degrees at kickoff.
Be a little bit windy Sunday. off the lake, probably.
Yeah, Lake Erie. There's nothing like it.
I have nothing to add. I've never been there, so yeah. I don't know.
There's a scene in one of the Naked Gun movies where Priscilla Presley is standing outside. And
we've talked about her before in the podcast,
yes, we have. And I think she's near she's near a trash compactor. And the late Robert Goulet comes up to her and like wonders why she's outside. And she says she just wanted some air. And then you have this, you know, this garbage nearby. She says, "I grew up on Lake Erie. There's nothing like it." And that will be the end of my Cleveland jokes on this podcast. Thank you.
Well, moving on. Wrapping up, I guess, what's happened at practice this week. Tyson Brilo is back. Demaryius Thomas is back. Long injury report this week. There's going to be the few not injury-related parts of that with Peyton and Owen Daniels and
Luis Vasquez.
Yep, and Lou.
All of whom had Wednesday Veterans Days off.
But the biggest one is going to be DeMarcus Ware, who did not practice at all this week, has a back injury, tightened up on him in the Raiders game. He left in the middle of the game, and Coach Kubiak has said that Shaq Barrett will be starting in his stead.
Yes, and when you have backups, the quality of Shaq Barrett and Shane Ray, each of whom have a couple of sacks apiece to their name so far this season, you have the luxury of taking your time with DeMarcus Ware. That's, you know, not every team has that quality in reserve among their edge rushers, so the Broncos can tell DeMarcus, look, you know, you had the back spasms on Sunday. I mean, they were bad enough to where he had to be carted off the field in the first half. So let's, you know, I think people hear back spasms and they think, oh, they go away. And let's not downplay this. I mean, you know, for anyone, but a guy in his 11th year, and if he has to take the cart off the field, it's something pretty serious that you've got to consider. So probably a smart move for the Broncos.
I mean, of all the timing,
to sit him out and let him rest.
And of all the timing, I mean, 1 week until we head into the bye week, for him to get a rest against a Cleveland Browns team that is, frankly, middling. I mean, that's what they are. They're middling right now.
They've got some spark, but yeah, they're 2-3. You are what you are.
And the Broncos are 5-0. You know, if they drop a game heading into the bye week, the worst things have happened, but you don't want to get DeMarcus Ware injured long-term for a game.
You don't want to get DeMarcus Ware injured, but you also want to take this – you have to take this game seriously because you need to store up all the wins you can. But that being said, the pass rush was there with Shaq Barrett spelling DeMarcus Ware last week. So you would think that would continue to be the case going forward, not against Joe Thomas, who's one of the league's best tackles on the left side, and Mitchell Schwartz. Barrett made a very good point when I talked to him Thursday in the locker room. And, you know, Schwartz and Thomas have had their moments, but what he said was that, you know, Josh McCown tends to hang on to the ball for quite a while. And on the one hand, that sets up his receivers downfield to make plays, and the Browns have been the league's best at getting 15 passes of 15 yards or more the last 4 weeks. It's become an explosive offense downfield thanks to Travis Benjamin, thanks to Gary Barnage, and also give credit to McCown for staying in there and taking some hits to deliver deliver throws. He's very composed, unruffled in the pocket, and it shows when, you know, in the fact that he's willing to stand in there, take the hit, wait for guys to get open downfield and get them the football. But that also sets the Broncos up for some pass rush opportunities, because you figure Barrett, Ray, Von Miller, the three techniques working inside, like Derek Wolfe, Malik Jackson, and Antonio Smith, they're going to be able to make some plays if they get the opportunity. If McCown holds it an extra half second or three quarters of a second longer than most quarterbacks would. So it may well play into the Broncos' hands.
When you talk about Josh McCown and how they've been making big plays in the passing game, a lot of that is after the catch. Phil Milani was talking about this earlier. You know, something like over 50% of his passing yards or 40% come after the catch. And that shouldn't be too surprising. I mean, these wide receivers they have are really fast. They're not big. I think their biggest receiver is Hartline. But between Travis Benjamin and Hawkins, those guys are really quick, really speedy, and can make some moves after they get their hands on the ball.
And Benjamin in particular, they use him on punt returns as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the routes he runs are very similar to the ones that Emmanuel Sanders runs for the Broncos. So if you watch Benjamin on Sunday and you get a little bit of deja vu, that's why. They have similar skill sets, similar strengths. But it's an interesting offense. You've got Johnson coming out of the backfield as well. He can make some plays.
They've used their running backs a lot in passing game.
Yeah, more so, frankly, than they have on the ground at times this year. So it's an interesting offense. It's an explosive offense. But given the strength of the Broncos in their pass rush and in their secondary, it's one I think the Broncos match up very well against.
And when I think you did mention Benjamin in the punt return, right?
Yes.
Yeah. They also do very well in special teams on returns, kick and punt returns. The Broncos have been doing well on their coverage teams, especially on kick returns. But with that wind, as we kind of talked about, that could make some adjustments there on that field. I don't know much about their stadium and how that opens up with the wind, but special teams could come into play with field position.
It's not the wide open end like some stadiums have, but there are open ends. There's openings in the corners as well, and you get some wind in from there. And of course, the lake shore location does put it in a particularly capricious weather spot. It's down where old Municipal Stadium used to be, and that was one of the most notorious venues in terms of conditions. While First Energy Stadium doesn't have that reputation, it's a tricky place to play. And certainly Cleveland, once you get past September, the weather can go in any direction. And we've got that cold front moving in. And so it's going to be the Broncos' first cold weather game. And, they've had some decent games in the cold. They've also had some bad ones. So it's something that they've got to be on guard for, certainly. From this point forward, you're going to have a lot of cold weather games. So might as well get started.
And with special teams being important, I think one reason that is because in the field position game, they don't generate a lot of turnovers from their defense. They've only got one interception so far through five games. So they need special teams to step up for them to help out their offense because their defense hasn't been able to do that so much.
Well, look at the shootout type games that they found themselves in. Look at the Baltimore game last week and how Ravens offense that has been somewhat inconsistent, got 30 points, forced them to overtime. And also against the run has been very poor. The Browns have allowed 5 yards a carry this year, 149 yards a game. And that's going to bring us into another significant storyline of this game, whether the Broncos can run the ball finally against a defense that has proven less than capable of stopping it on a consistent basis. The Browns' pass rush has done all right. They've got, not great, 10 sacks in five games, a 101.9 rating for opposing quarterbacks against them, so not great numbers in the passing game, but really struggling against the run. And they've allowed seven gains on the ground of at least 20 yards. They've only forced one fumble on 148 rushing attempts. You would think if the Broncos can finally get the running game going, it's going to happen here. And the flip side of that is, if they can't run on the Browns, then who are you going to be able to run against? Because this is probably the softest run defense the Broncos will see the rest of the way.
It seems like something's got to give. We talk about that. There's also the Browns' red zone defense, which ranks 27th, which I think matches up with the Broncos' red zone offense. So hopefully the Broncos get something going as they get close to the end zone, because they had a lot of struggles with that. Even against Oakland, who's whose secondary was pretty soft as far as defenses go. They were able to hold the Broncos to field goals in their red zone trips.
Mm-hmm. And some of that came from pressure, of course. At the end of the first half, we saw the red zone drive go askew when Malcolm Smith had the blitz and Peyton Manning had the throw under pressure, and it was intercepted by Charles Woodson. So that cost the Broncos 7 points right there, and of course the dropped pass on third and goal by Demaryius Thomas in the third quarter that cost the Broncos 4 points. But in Thomas's defense, he was playing hurt, playing with a sore neck that's been bothering him since the Vikings game. He did practice Friday. Looks like he's going to play Sunday, but when you evaluate what Thomas is doing, you have to understand that he's playing hurt right now, and sometimes that's going to have a little bit of an effect. It's only natural.
If the Broncos win this game, they enter their bye week 6-0. I mean, with the suspensions early into Derek Wolfe and T.J. Ward, and then the schedule coming up after the bye week that's so difficult with Packers, Colts, New England, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a major boon to this team to get that into the books as they head in to get some much-needed rest.
Yeah, just keep putting those acorns away, because you're going to need them. I doubt the Broncos go on a 5-game winning streak coming out of the bye. I mean, if they do win their first 5 consecutive games out of the bye, then
my goodness,
they have to be the best team in the league, given the quality of opponents they will have beaten to get there in terms of taking care of Green Bay and Indianapolis and New England. I think you go 5-0 out of the bye, you're the favorite for Super Bowl from the Super Bowl from the AFC.
10-0, you probably should be.
Well, that's assuming. if they beat the Browns,
11-0.
If they don't, they'd be 10-1. But you know what's interesting about this game? It's a conference game, even though it's not a common opponent between the Broncos and Patriots. It's a common opponent between the Broncos and the Bengals, but of course they've got the head-to-head meeting in Week 16. And if the Broncos find themselves in the division race, if they fall back and someone else catches up, this is going to be a common opponent in the divisional race. So it is a game that means something. It is a game the Broncos need to have to continue building momentum. And quite frankly, if you want to get the offense going in this game, because not only do you want to start becoming a more complete team and get the offense up off the foot of the statistic of the legs you're in the stats. I mean, they're 31st, 30th, 28th in so many metrics on offense right now, and that's just not going to sustain itself. You want this offense to at least get to average, and if the offense can get to average and the defense can maintain its pace, you're going to have something special. But if not, then and the Broncos do lose on Sunday, then boy, it's going to be a very uncomfortable 2 weeks around here leading into the Pack game.
The divisional race is interesting. I mean, because it's kind of bearing itself out right now as far as the Broncos are undefeated, obviously, and the rest is kind of in the middle. I mean, the Chargers have lost. They've lost a couple games. They lost that heartbreaking game against Pittsburgh on Monday Night Football. The Raiders are improving, yet still I don't think they're quite ready to make any kind of jump. They've got too many flaws in their defense and
had their opportunity the last 2 weeks and lost it.
Yeah.
I think they're gonna look back at not only the Broncos game but the Bears game the week before and really kick themselves. They're not that far from being 4-1. But there they are at 2-3, and they might have put themselves in a hole that's too deep to climb out of. What's interesting, if looking at the AFC as a whole, because the AFC South is so bad beyond Indianapolis, every division leader has at least a game and a half advantage on the second-place team. The Colts have a game and a half lead on Tennessee, who's 1-3. But the Patriots have a 2-game lead. The Bengals have a 2-game lead. The Broncos have a 3-game lead. It's hard to recall a year in which in one conference you had the teams atop their divisions breaking away so substantially as
they
are
quickly
right now.
Yeah, that's I hadn't looked around the rest of the conference yet, but yeah, that's kind of stunning.
It's early. A lot can happen. Teams can go on losing streaks. Skids happen every time or somewhere in the league every year.
I mean, it's funny when teams start 0-3, they look back and there's like only one team since whenever, like 1996, I want to say, something like that, that's made the playoffs after going 0-3. But if you go 3-0, then there's plenty of teams that haven't made the playoffs if you go 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a pretty long list, I'm sure.
Well, the list is going to be naturally longer at the 3-0 than the 0-3, and obviously what else affects that is that you still only have 12 out of 32 teams making the playoffs. So 3-0 is not it's not exactly implausible that you lose a playoff spot at 3-0. And as Broncos fans remember, it's not implausible to lose a playoff spot at 6-0 because that's what happened in 2009 when they went from 6-0 to 8-8. So it does happen.
Jeez, I wasn't around for that.
It was the first year of Josh McDaniels. Pardon me. 6-0, and then they went to Baltimore and got pummeled. Came home against Pittsburgh and got pummeled on Monday Night Football. And it just kind of went out of control from there, and they lost 8 of their last 10, and then they lost 10 of their first or actually it'd be 11 of their first 14 the following year, although the last two of those games were with Eric Studisil after McDaniels had been fired. And actually, like, the Broncos had a frustrating knack for fast starts and kind of shaky finishes. In 08, they started 3-0, got to 8-5, finished 8-8, missed the playoffs. In 06, they were, I believe, 5-1 and 7-2 in 06, and then finished 9-7 and out of the playoffs. That was a year that's actually come up quite a bit in social media conversation this week, because in the wake of people tweeting at me that the Broncos, suggesting that the Broncos replace Peyton Manning in the starting lineup, my response was to cite the 06 season and the decision to relieve Jake Plummer for Jay Cutler as an example of why you shouldn't bench your starting quarterback when you're doing relatively well as a team. And that's something to, you know, that's something that fans that want to, you know, that want to have an itchy trigger finger, want to act on an itchy trigger finger, they need to remember, because despite the issues on offense, and we've talked about them, and we mentioned where, you know, some of their rankings, this is still a 5-0 team. The offense has improved in the big picture from that performance in Week 1, although I think certainly there were some steps back against Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, how often is it an incline, a straight incline? Usually, right, you've got your peaks and your valleys. So you hope that they can rebound this week, and certain, I think, it will make a lot of people in this building feel a heck of a lot better if the offense can put it together on Sunday against Cleveland. And I think if the offense doesn't, it's not going to be fans that are, you know, kind of that are frustrated. I think people in this building will be too.
If we look around the league after our Thursday night game in which one of our undefeated teams fell, that would be the Falcons, who dropped a game to the Saints. I would say surprisingly. I know we all picked the Falcons to win. There are only 5 teams left that have zeros in the in the loss column: Broncos, Pats, Panthers, Bengals, and am I forgetting anyone?
You're forgetting the best team in the league.
Oh, Packers.
The Packers.
Yeah.
Packers or Patriots.
So this week we have, obviously, facing the Browns. Then you have, you have the Colts going against the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And let's see.
Carolina goes to Seattle.
Yeah, Carolina's playing Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Bengals, I think, Buffalo? I think, yeah.
Yes.
I think Buffalo.
With EJ Manuel in line to start.
And the Packers, oh, I'd have to look that up.
Packers have, oh, come on, I'm scrolling.
Oh, Chargers.
San Diego, of course, in Lambeau Field. Yeah.
Who do you see? Well, I guess we could go look at your picks online, but who do you think? You think any of those teams will lose this week?
I think Carolina loses at Seattle.
I picked the same as well.
Yeah, it's a long trip. There's a lot of history there against the Seahawks for the Panthers, and none of it's good. If there's one team that frustrates the Panthers and has held back their progress more than any other in recent years, it is the Seattle Seahawks. They keep playing in the regular season. They keep losing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Carolina went out to Seattle last January. Gave the Seahawks a really tough run.
First half.
Yeah, and then Seattle pulled away after halftime for the win. You know that Carolina is pumped for this game. They're going to get Luke Kuechly back. They've done well holding down the fort on defense without him, but.
What can you do with that receiving core against that secondary, though? Ted Ginn Jr. is your top receiving threat.
You run the ball.
Okay. Good luck.
A lot of option. you go back to some option, and you hope that Cam Newton doesn't get hit too hard, quite frankly. It doesn't match up well. I mean, even though you know they're jacked for this game, I don't like their chances. I think Green Bay eases past San Diego at home. I guess that
the Chargers don't have a rushing offense.
Yeah,
their offensive line has kind of been, as you say, held together by
duct tape and baling wire.
Yep, and their defense struggles to kind of, you know,
couldn't finish.
Yeah,
on Monday against Pittsburgh, couldn't finish. You know the. Where everyone's fixated on, of course, the Le'Veon Bell run at the end of the game.
They also gave what up about a 72-yarder.
Yeah, and also what about letting Michael Vick get out of the pocket and take off earlier on that drive? He'd done, you know, almost nothing with his feet to that point, and ends up having the run that keeps the drive alive, gets him down in field goal range, really. And at that point, you could see San Diego kind of deflate from there. I think, you know, Green Bay, I think, is gonna have that game lock, stock, and barrel. New England has to go to Indianapolis, but I talk about how the Panthers are gonna be geeked for their trip to Seattle. Given everything that happened this offseason, and we don't need to go into footballs and PSI and Ballgazi and Deflategate or whatever you want to call it.
Ballgazi is a pretty good
yeah,
one.
It's very good. Is any team madder going into this week and more fervent about proving a point than New England? I think that one could get ugly fast, even if Andrew Luck is able to be out there for the Colts.
Michael Irvin apparently said that that they should sit Andrew Luck and leave Matt Hasselbeck in.
I don't think that's the worst idea, honestly. What's interesting with the Colts, though, if they lose, let's say the Colts lose that game.
Okay.
And the other unbeatens in the AFC win, and thus have 3-game leads in the loss column on the Colts. And I think we can look at the AFC South and the quality of the teams chasing the Colts and say that even if they come home 9-7, they should win that division pretty comfortably the way everything is trending.
Sure.
You've got young quarterbacks in Jacksonville and Tennessee finding their way, and Blake Bortles and Marcus Mariota. Mm-hmm. And Houston, you know, they have two quarterbacks, which means they have none. And I don't think there's many people in Texans Nation, if that does exist, who believe that Brian Hoyer or Ryan Mallett really is a quarterback of the future, at least with Bortles.
It's a dark corner of the web on Texans Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Texans oh, my Twitter, gosh. Yes. Yeah. If you're at least in Jacksonville and Tennessee, you believe you've got your guy for the future.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, Jacksonville was trying to throw a lot of deep stuff. It's more than probably any team, I think.
the Bortles to Allen Hurns connection, man. It works.
I mean, roll the dice.
Why and not? They want to get Julius Thomas more involved, obviously, as well.
Played his first game.
Yeah, now that he's healthy. So watch them a bit, but I don't think anyone in that division is really going to push the Colts. The Titans could have if they'd beaten Indianapolis in Nashville. Didn't happen. Let them off the hook in the parlance of Denny Green. So the Colts could be if they lose Sunday, the Colts could be three games back in the loss column of the other unbeaten teams and yet mm-hmm. still a pretty good bet to win their division. So they could be in a very interesting spot as to, you know, especially with Andrew Luck saying, you know, not having to rush him back.
Yeah.
Because they might well be as close to locked into that number four seed as possible, as you possibly can be.
That's interesting. They've
Whereas
not been good.
If the Bengals and Broncos and Patriots all keep winning, those three teams could be in a three-way fight for home field advantage, the bye week. I mean, if they sustain their momentum. And the thing with the Bengals, Broncos, and Patriots, they all have something that they do just better than just about anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
With the Bengals and Patriots, obviously it's more on offense.
Right.
While the Bengals have a very nice balance to their team. And, of course, the Broncos, it's their defense
mm-hmm.
that is the league's best. That's another reason why those three teams can run away and fight it and perhaps fight out amongst themselves for the top seed, assuming all of them stay healthy. I think there's a pretty wide gap between those three and the rest of the AFC at this point.
What do you make of the NFC wildcard chase? Because, I mean, the Cardinals have the NFC West right now. I mean,
you figure Seattle's going to get back into it, even though
they're 2-3.
Yeah, they're 2-3. They're still. You watch them.
There's a lot of
a good team. You know, they're a good team and potentially a great team. And losing to Cincinnati, although frustrating in the manner in which it happened, losing a 24-7 lead in the fourth quarter, that's not going to cause you to panic. Cincinnati is an excellent team, and you're on the road.
Yeah.
You're going to look back and kick yourself over it a bit, but you're not going to say, oh my gosh, how did we lose that game? Because the Bengals are pretty darn good. Now, that being said, Seattle is a bad officials call in the end zone away from potentially being 1-4. And the Cardinals are 4-1. The Cardinals have the best net point differential in the league, and obviously
best interception rate too. Yep. I think they pick off an incredible number of passes.
You can talk about the quality or the lack thereof of some of the teams that they've faced, but it's not like they're just squeaking by against substandard opposition, which as good as the Broncos' defense has been, is a valid point that they've just gotten by against some teams that have their issues. Cardinals are throttling.
It feels like they're more under the radar this year than they were last year.
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think they are. I think actually having Carson Palmer back kind of shoved them into the spotlight a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it feels that way because
they were undefeated.
Yeah, and also does it feel that way because they haven't had a national television game?
That's probably it. Yeah.
But it doesn't feel to me like they're under the radar that much. I think Carolina, which is now in first place because Atlanta's lost, Carolina feels like it's under the radar.
It is.
Even though
Cam Newton is like dragging that offense like a dog that doesn't want to go forward.
Yeah, he's dragging the offense, but the one thing I'll say, they've been under the radar, but people are really starting to notice Josh Norman.
Oh yes,
and
it's hard not to.
You've got to put him.
Jameis Winston has noticed him. I'm sure.
You've got to put him in the pantheon of top five cornerbacks in the league the way he's playing. And then, what's interesting? If the playoffs started today, the Minnesota Vikings
should do that sometime.
Yeah,
start the playoffs.
Yeah,
just when someone says
that. In 1982 we actually started them after 9 games because of the strike. So. But yeah. If you did start the playoffs today, Minnesota would be in at 2-2. Chicago, which had 10 possessions and 10 punts with Jimmy Clausen at quarterback in Seattle. Chicago is a half game out of the postseason.
Well, hey, I mean,
John Fox.
You can't compare Jimmy Clausen to
Jay Cutler. Well, and also John Fox, as we've seen, as we saw here, especially in 2011, does a lot. He and the staff do a lot of their best work in crisis situations.
Oh yeah,
making the best of what you have. The Bears are making the most of what they've got.
My goodness, that comeback against Kansas City was pretty good.
And killer for the Chiefs.
Oh my, the Chiefs are in a bad spot.
Did anyone have a worse Sunday last week than Kansas City?
No, because they didn't just lose one game. They lost a bunch.
Jamal Charles. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So they are up the creek. They're four games back in their division.
They're demoralized.
Yes, it's.
In a very tough spot.
It's going to be tough for them to extricate themselves from this predicament in which they find themselves. The other thing, the NFC wild card. The one thing is you figure that the Seahawks will emerge.
Yeah, I mean, there's too many other teams that are right there with them.
Yeah,
that are not as good.
I still expect the wild card teams to come from the NFC West and the NFC South.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, if Minnesota can hang around, and we know that Minnesota is a pretty good team, having seen them here back on October the 4th, Minnesota can steal a game here and there. They take care of their business at home. It's a crucial game for them, I think, against the Chiefs on Sunday. They've got to. You know, come out and dominate the way they dominated against San Diego and Detroit. If Minnesota does that and can get there, and if Minnesota can put themselves in a situation where they can get their season down to where they have the games against the Packers, and they had one of them at home, obviously, and they have a very interesting game next month against Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
They can put themselves in a situation where, hey, you know. One game like that can flip their fortunes. So, fascinating. We should probably touch on the AFC wild card race a bit too.
Yeah, sure.
Pittsburgh and Buffalo.
Well, Pittsburgh's trying to just hold on with Mike Vick there, QB, while they wait for Roethlisberger coming back.
They can go 500 with Mike Vick, and so far they're one and one. They go 500 with Vick. That's all they need to do. I think it's good enough. It's a good enough roster with when Roethlisberger gets back to where they're going to win more often than not. I still think the Steelers are in good shape for a wild card. And if they can keep the Bengals within hailing distance of the division races, that's the one that I think could tighten.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't let the Bengals get out in front any more than a couple of games. So whatever, you know, they've got to match somehow, some way. They have to match what the Bengals do. Or, you know, in the case of this week, they're hoping they can pick up a game if the Bengals go to Buffalo and get upset, and that brings us to the other viable wild card contender, or one of them, along with the Jets, and that's the Buffalo Bills sitting there at 3-2, a half game behind the Jets at 3-1. Actually, you know what? I forgot about the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets 3-1.
So yeah, there's a team with a one game lead in the AFC. My bad, Patriots over the Jets. I'm foolish. If you're still listening.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember, yeah.
You can go back and add that if you want, or you can leave that in. I don't care.
We all make mistakes.
Yes, but I forgot about the Jets because they were off last week. And that, okay.
Yeah, oh, after,
and
their,
I'll tell you
after
what,
their London game.
And I'll tell you what, flying under the radar, pun intended, the New York Jets.
For sure.
Flying so far under the radar, I forgot they were in second place.
Their quarterback is from Harvard. That's all you need to know about him.
The best set of targets that Ryan Fitzpatrick has ever had, though, in Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker.
Yes.
We're not just saying that because they're former Broncos draft picks at wide receiver. They complement each other well.
Mm-hmm.
They're great production on the ground. And that defense, if you look at more than just total yardage and you look at a broad-based set of metrics, as I like to do on defense, the Jets' defense is comparable to the Broncos.
They're really good in the pass.
Mm-hmm.
They're great at forcing turnovers.
Good pass rush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely
saw some inkling of that last year when the Broncos went to MetLife Stadium and lost a hard-fought game from the Jets. It went down to the last minute, of course.
It was really close.
But Fitzpatrick is managing the game.
Mm-hmm. One of the people always talk about him going to Harvard, but one of the things I can't remember if I said this on the podcast before or not, but he wears his wedding ring during every game.
Yeah, now some guys
that's dangerous.
Yeah, some guys will wear the rubber band.
Yeah,
wedding ring popular. On game days. Not Fitzpatrick.
You break your finger and it swells up or something. Mm-hmm. You got to get that thing cut off or something.
Yeah.
Not necessarily your finger, but you have to get the ring cut off.
Yeah, I kind of have the opposite problem with mine because I lost some weight and it slipped off, and actually it slipped off to the point where I don't know where it is.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I hope Amy's not listening to this.
If she sees it says, oh, where's your wedding ring? I'll have to tell her, oh, I don't know where it is. It's actually somewhere, I think it's somewhere around my desk.
Okay.
Because the last place I saw it was...
We've isolated the location.
Yes, but I've torn my desk area up and down. I can't find it. But I was worried. You know what? I was worried that was going to happen because every time I noticed it first when I washed my hands. I couldn't wash my hands without it coming off.
Hmm.
So I started being cautious, and I just said, okay, fine, I'm just going to jam this thing in my pocket.
Yeah.
And, well...
now Mace is going to go on a scavenger hunt.
I'm going to have... Well, that's what bye weeks are for, right? To do different things. I'm going to get in there during the bye week and tear that cubicle inside out until I can find this thing.
Let's end our podcast with talking about the bye week.
Yes.
Are you doing anything for the bye week?
I'm getting out of town. Going away for the weekend. That's right. not a plane trip. Usually I would fly somewhere like North Carolina. I've flown to California. Thought briefly about flying up to Vancouver.
Oh, that's
for the
a good
weekend,
trip.
But I'm really tired at this point. I think we all are.
Yep.
I just didn't really want to, and also I kind of got the extra plane trip out of my system when I went back to Raleigh, North Carolina
for the family wedding
last month. So I just wanted to stay in town. How about you, or near town and in the state?
Right. Well, last year we didn't really go anywhere. Me and my girlfriend. So we're gonna go to L.A. For much of the week. I'm going to be here on Monday to do some work and take care of some things. But after Monday, I'm going to fly out with her to see her sister who was in Hollywood.
So what you're saying
Hollywood, but the area.
So what you're saying is there will be no bi-week podcast.
I'm afraid so. There's not going to be any bi-week podcast. There will be plenty of... I'm going to take out some stories, though, that I'm preparing to publish during the bi-week, some feature stories on the defense. I've been working on a Jeff Hyreman story that is missing photos, and I've been trying to track down photos for the better part of like 4 months now.
This Hyreman story is something of an inside joke in our office, by the way, now.
It's a running joke that it's never going to happen. It started off as like a 2,000-word like book, and we've whittled it down to 1,200, I think, something like that. So I'm hopeful that this contact will give me some photos, and I'll be able to do that finally.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, it's not too time dependent. So, and
that's positive.
And I'm also working on a Joe DeCamillis story of how he went from All-American wrestler at Wyoming to hopeful high school football/wrestling coach. To Broncos special teams coordinator.
He was in Laramie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not the end of the world, but you could see it from there.
I think that's the quote that Dan Reeves said.
Joe told me to look it up.
Yeah. I have not been able
I haven't
to find
found it.
It
either. I looked for it last night. I can't find it.
I'm beginning to wonder if it was just something he said aside and people kind of gave him some grief about it in private.
Of course, Dan Reeves is his father-in-law.
Yes.
So that is the kind of playful family banter that you would have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, you know Dan Reeves went to school at the University of South Carolina in Columbia. Never exactly the hotbed of civilization. I'm sorry. Did I let that slip? All you people in South Carolina. Oops. Columbia's a fine town. It's got It's good parts. I still prefer Charleston.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, I don't think many people are going to fight you on that.
Yeah. So.
Well, except for the lovely fans.
But there's a lot of South Carolina fans in Charleston.
Sure.
You know, they've got support all over the state. Support of a new football coach now since Steve Spurrier's retired. We have to, and this is actually a good place to end it on this vignette. Do you know Steve Spurrier's connection to Broncos history?
Not directly.
Okay.
I know he coached Darian Stewart, but that's
well, after he was with San Francisco for a while as a backup, and then he went to Tampa Bay in 1976 as the Buccaneers' first starting quarterback. The team stunk. He didn't have much of an offensive line. Didn't really have a chance. Ends up in Denver for training camp in 1977. And it was the competition at quarterback was heated between Spurrier and Craig Morton, who had been acquired in a trade that offseason. So heated, so close, that a lot of people thought Spurrier was going to win the job and be the Broncos' opening day starter for 1977.
Wow.
Morton beat him out.
Obviously.
The rest is history.
Yep, that team.
But that magical 1977 team was very close to being led by Stephen Orr Spurrier.
Orr. I did not know Orr. Yeah. I didn't know his middle name.
Yeah, his initials are SOS. So when a college program had a crisis, whether you were
Spurrier.
Duke or Florida or South Carolina, you called SOS.
Well, that's a good way to leave off the podcast as any. As we mentioned, no podcast next week during the bye. Very sorry. I hope everyone else takes some time off during the bye week as well, not just us. But we will catch y'all a week after that as we get ready for the Ring of Fame game hosting the Green Bay Packers. As always, subscribe on iTunes if you so desire. And yes, enjoy the Browns game. We'll catch you in a couple weeks.